Hello, everyone, and welcome to Full Time, where we take you around the world of soccer, locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. Full Time is presented by the Game Sports Podcast and powered by 91 Network. You are listening to Season 4, Episode 17 of Full Time. I'm your host, Daniel Scarpino, and with me is our co-host, Gaetano Gallo. Before we begin today's show, Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. With their two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, you can download and access the Pizza Portal app so you can enjoy a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. Remind our listeners that recordings of Full Time occur weekly or bi-weekly, and uploads to all of our platforms for public viewing and listening occur weekly or bi-weekly as well. Folks, we are delighted to be here on this podcast with you all, where we get to talk about the beautiful game. G, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm doing great. The weather's finally starting to turn. Got some NHL playoffs on the TV. Talking soccer with you. Couldn't ask for a better night. How are you doing?
I agree with you there. And I'm also doing very well. And it's good to see that the weather is certainly turning around. In today's show, we will talk about Europe's Big Five, the FA Cup, the Champions League, the Europa League, and local soccer. As always, if anyone would like to listen to our previous content, please check us out at Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. And without further ado, Gaetano, and to everyone who has taken the time to tune in here today, let's kick off. We get today's show going with discussions about Europe's Big Five, and we'll get things going with Italy's Serie A. Gaetano, it is official. Inter are champions of Italy. They have done it with five games to spare as they currently sit on top of the division with 86 points, which is 17 more than second place Milan. Gee, absolutely incredible from into this season when so many people had their doubts. Your thoughts on the champions of Italy?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I was so wrong about them. I thought, you know, they sold basically the spine of a, you know, a European giant and somehow turned it into an even better team. I don't know how they managed to do it, but it was just an incredible season from them. And to cap it all off, securing the league title, beating their biggest rivals, AC Milan. Couldn't write a better script than that.
No kidding. It was incredible all season from them, and they fully deserved it, and they found a way in spite of all of those outgoings, and kudos to them because they were and have been and continue to be the best team in Italy. The battle for the remaining European places in Italy does crack on, with Milan, Juventus, and Bologna all occupying those positions right now. Roma is 7 points out of the top four. Atalanta is 8 points out of the top four. And Lazio is 10 points out. Do you anticipate that anyone else, apart from those teams that we mentioned, are they going to get into the top four? Or are those teams that are in there, Milan, Juventus, and Bologna, are they there to stay?
I can't look past Roma. They've been playing great since De Rossi came in. They're kind of riding a European high with their success in the Europa League. I wouldn't be shocked to see them get in there, but it is still a bit of a climb for them. 6 points is not the easiest to overcome at this point of the season. But if any one of those teams is going to squeak in, I would assume it would be Roma.
Yeah, and I am with you there. I think for me personally, I think it's going to stay as is. But if you had to give one team a chance to get in, you'd say Roma. And depending on what happens for them in the Europa League, which we're going to talk a little bit later on in the show about, I think that it is definitely a possibility that they can make a push. We now move it over to La Liga in Spain, and Real Madrid have increased their lead at the top to 11 points after a recent slip up from Barcelona. Barcelona still remains second with 70 points. Girona is third with 68 points. Atletico Madrid holds fourth with 61 points. Gee, just last week we were hopeful for a title race in Spain, but it is Real Madrid who are leaving all title challengers in the dust. With just six games to go, is it time to say that it is going to be Real Madrid's?
Yeah, I can't see it going any other way at this point. They've been great this season. You know, Girona pushing for the first half of the season, Barcelona with this late push now, but they've just been a class above this whole season.
Yeah, and you want to take a look at consistency. Girona started really quick, came out of the gate fast, and then started to dip off. Real Madrid have kind of been that consistent team, whereas Barcelona started slow, and now they kind of made this late push, but probably a little bit too late. So yes, I do agree that it is probably time to say that it is going to be theirs, as in Real Madrid's. But some interesting news coming out of Spain today. It was announced, and we said it on our show about 2 months ago, that Xavi would be leaving Barcelona at the end of the season as coach. He has come out in the press conference that he had today, and he said that his feelings are far too strong for the club for him to leave, and he will be returning next season. So, gee, a big turn of events, an unexpected turn of events, at least for me. I did not expect to see that. So your thoughts on Xavi now staying at Barcelona after the season?
Yeah, I can't say I've seen this before that I can recall anyways, and especially not, you know, at the scale of being at Barcelona where a manager says he's going to leave and, you know, a couple months later says, just kidding, going to come back next year. I think it kind of throws a monkey wrench into a lot of top clubs' plans with either Xavi being available to make an approach or for managers potentially going to replace him at Barcelona. So I'm interested to see kind of how that plays out. I also think it's kind of silly of him. The board is so fickle at Barcelona. I think going out kind of on a high of, you know, on his own terms would have been great. He's just going to end up getting sacked halfway through next year, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it's either going to be that or it's going to be similar to how it was this year where he's going to make it towards the end of the season, but people are going to be really bitter about things. And I don't really think that bodes well. So I would have liked for him, for his own sake, because I respect him so much, for him to just leave on his own terms, but he's decided not to. And hopefully, you know, the adoration that people have there and the admiration that they have for him there can withstand the test of time. But I'm not particularly hopeful with such a gritty club like Barcelona. They want what they want, and they'll stamp on anybody to get it, even one of their own. So I would have liked for him to go, but he'll be back. Out in France's Ligue 1, PSG have an 11-point gap at the top. They have 69 points. The second place, Monaco's 58 points. Brest is third with 53 points. Gaetano, is PSG only focused on the Champions League now, or do they still, in your opinion, have a little bit of work to do in Ligue 1?
Realistically, they should have had Ligue 1 wrapped up about 2.5-3 weeks ago. But they had some patchy form this year, and we talked about this is kind of a growing year for them, you know, in quotations. You know, trying actual squad building instead of just buying superstars. So I'm not surprised that it's not wrapped up yet, but it's not they, you know, need to focus all their attention. They do have to keep an eye on it. You know, with 8 games left, you don't want to totally just blow it. But they really should be like 99% focused on the Champions League at this point.
Yeah, the majority of that focus, in my opinion, does need to be geared towards the Champions League because it's not wrapped up yet domestically, but it soon will be. And as soon as it is, I don't think that they want to be in a position where they're thinking, we should have put a little bit more attention into the Champions League. I think that for the most part, again, like you said, 99%, I think that's a good number. All eyes are set on European competition. The Bundesliga in Germany, as we know, has its champion in Bayer Leverkusen. The battle for the top four remains between Bayern Munich, Stuttgart, RB Leipzig, and Dortmund. Gee, for you, who's going to get those last three spots?
So I think Bayern Munich and Stuttgart, I would say, are relatively safe at this point. Only a handful of games left. It's 4 games for each. So like, I think, you know, that kind of gap, unless Bayern Munich absolutely collapse, which I don't expect from them. I just have this sneaking suspicion about Dortmund. There's something about them this year. I think they might, and we'll get to it a bit later too, but I think just domestically, I think they're going to make that push, and I think they're going to get their Champions League spot.
Yeah, I love that show. For me, I also think that there's something now in the back end of the season with Dortmund that's quite special, and I could definitely see them getting into the top four. I think right now, if you had to make me pick, I'm going to say Leipzig, and I don't particularly know why. I just think that Dortmund might be destined for something really special in Europe, and I have this really funny gut feeling. So I think that maybe that's where their focus is going to be, and they might not be getting into the top four, but it will be a tough battle. I do also agree that Bayern Munich and Stuttgart are pretty much locked in there. And RB Leipzig and Dortmund will kind of duke it out. But yeah, I can't wait to get to the conversation later on about the Champions League with Dortmund because, yeah, some really cool things there going on with them.
I feel like we're on the same wave. We're thinking on the same wavelength already.
And again, like even with the Inter thing, when I picked them at the beginning of the season, you asked me, not you, but if anyone were to ask, well, why'd you pick them? I don't know, just stomach feeling. So yeah, really looking forward to that conversation later. And in the English Premier League, another change at the top has occurred, as it is Arsenal who do return back to first place with 77 points. Manchester City is second with 76 points, but they do have a game in hand over the leaders. Liverpool is in third after dropping the Merseyside Derby this past weekend. They have 74 points. Aston Villa is currently in the number four position with 66 points. Tottenham has 60 points in fifth with two games in hand, not to mention their most upcoming game this Sunday against Arsenal in the North London Derby. Gaetano, some more shakeups at the top. Your Manchester City had a fantastic victory today. So we see the title race again. It's moving a little bit here and there. So I'll give the floor to you, sir.
Yeah, and it's funny. Even if City, Arsenal, and Liverpool all win their remaining games, there's still going to be about seven or eight different changes at the top just because of how the schedule is laid out. Yep. So when we said that there's going to be a lot of changes at the top, like, we weren't being sarcastic or, you know, exaggerating. Like, it's actually just mathematically how it's going to work out. Although I will say, I think Liverpool are out. I think we're looking at a two-horse race right now. And, I mean, to blow it in the way they did, losing at the home of their biggest rival, just means more, doesn't it?
Yes, so. And then not to mention, you know, people stop talking about the Crystal Palace game. Like, you know, if Arsenal would have lost Aston Villa, which they did, then they would have lost another one afterwards. For me as a fan, I'm going to sit there and think it's pretty much all but done. However, just because of how interesting the season has been, I'm not ready to say that it's a two-horse title race yet. If Liverpool drop one more game, though, in my opinion, it is. And again, City have that crucial game in hand. I don't know exactly who it's against. You might be able to provide some insight.
If you give me 2 seconds, sure. I can pull up City's fixture list. What I will say with Liverpool, for them to win the league, they would need City to drop. Well, now it would be 6 points in five games because that math was done before this morning's game. So 6 points over the next five games, and they would need Arsenal to drop 4 and 4. 4 points in four games. So I look at that and I just go, I don't see either of those happening.
Not realistic.
So I that's why I think I think they might still win their remaining games. It's just not going to be enough. And in the league, City have Forest this Sunday, Wolves the following Saturday, Fulham the Saturday after that, a Tuesday clash with Tottenham. So there's your game in hand. So that's a nice, easy one for us. So it's very sarcastic if you're listening and not watching. And then wrapping up the season against West Ham.
Yeah, and Tottenham have a huge say in this title race, by the way, like the biggest say, because
they still play all three.
All three. Arsenal.
That's huge.
Yeah, like Liverpool and then the City game, of course. So, yeah, they're going to have a big say. And you know that Tottenham is going to do everything in the power to not let Arsenal win it. So this Sunday o'clock, I will have the coffee on. I will have the blanket on the couch, but I will, I'd imagine, be a bundle of nerves. So. But gotta love this title race, especially if you're a neutral fan, I'd imagine. The relegation battle in the Premier League is decreasing in terms of the number of teams trying to get out of relegation. After back-to-back wins, Everton, who is 16th, have pulled themselves 8 points clear of the drop zone. One place out of the relegation zone is 17th place Nottingham Forest, who has 26 points. The bottom three consist of Luton Town, it also consists of Burnley and Sheffield United, as we know. Let's pose some hypotheticals here. Luton Town are quite literally just one win away from being out of the drop zone, whereas Burnley would need 4 points to get out of the drop zone, seeing as their goal difference is inferior to Nottingham Forest if they went level on points. So all of this is sort of dependent upon Nottingham Forest dropping their next 1 to 2 games. And again, it's a little bit of confusing math, I guess, but can we still have some level of optimism and hope for Burnley and Luton given what I just said there?
So Forest's next game is against City, which could get really ugly for them. You know, they're sitting at a negative 18 goal difference. If City play the way they have been, and they typically do in the run-in, like, that's, you're probably looking at holding 4 or 5. City have scored at least 4 in their 5 last Premier League games. Like, they're kind of, we're rolling now. This is my favorite time of year to watch games, because it's when you see the Pep machine running at its best. I think Forest are in for a long Sunday. And they look at what Luton and Burnley are playing. Wolves and United both, you know, are there for the taking. Probably United more than Wolves, honestly. I think there's a real possibility now that we see some change. And maybe if it's not permanent, I still think there's a surprising amount of, you know, kind of shock value. And there's going to be some intensity to these last few games of the season compared to what we kind of have been talking about in the previous weeks, where it was kind of guaranteed to be those three teams.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is, at least in my opinion, we talk so often about the top of the Premier League and how things are changing and how we have these, not maybe differences in opinion, but how our opinions slightly change. You know, one week it's, hey, Liverpool are right in the conversation. Now we're saying, oh, they might be out of the conversation. If we take a look back 1 week, 2 weeks ago, we're having a much different conversation about the relegation battle. And now all of a sudden we're saying, hey, it's very possible that Nottingham Forest can drop in, and look at how close it actually is. So yeah, we definitely will keep an eye on the relegation battle, and it will only take one or two results for things to shake up. And as we know, in the world of football, things can happen very, very fast. G, let's have a look at the FA Cup here. On our previous show, we were able to highlight the FA Cup semifinals, and now we're able to review those games and subsequently highlight who has made the FA Cup final. The first of the games that we're going to review here was contested between Manchester City and Chelsea. It took until the 84th minute for either team to find the breakthrough, but it was Manchester City who got that all-important goal, and it came from Bernardo Silva. As a result, Manchester City defeat Chelsea by a score of 1-0 and booked their place in the FA Cup final for a second straight season. Gee, it's your Manchester City who were ultimately resilient in the semifinal and find their way back to yet another Cup final with the intention to win it for a second straight year. If you could, please break this game down for us and give us your thoughts overall.
Yeah, I want to start by saying that was probably one of the gutsiest, ballsiest performances I've seen from City in my lifetime as a City fan, not even just under Pep. 72 hours removed from going 120 minutes against Madrid, losing that shootout, not just physically, but emotionally draining, to turn around, head to Wembley, and play a really stubborn Chelsea team. A lot of the players after match said that they were not fit at all to play that. It looked that way very much from watching it. A really slow, lethargic kind of game from both sides. And Pep in the post-game press said that, you know, it was one of his proudest moments, was kind of the performance the team put in there against all the odds. You know, just coming off that kind of an awful week, turning that around and putting in that performance was awesome. Bernardo Silva with just the most clutch goal. I love him to absolute bits. One of my favorite players to ever wear a City shirt. He's coming up, always comes up when we need him most. And that was perfect. On the Chelsea side, I'll say that Nicholas Jackson was awful. I've never seen a player go like, what, 35, 40 yards one-on-one with a keeper. And not even like, I wasn't even scared, Scarps. Like he got the ball and I was like, okay, like this is nervy. And he's running it, and he just like runs into the corner. I've never seen that before in my life. It was one of the worst performances from a forward I've ever seen. It was a very, very tough game. And I texted you after, you know, City probably should have won midweek against Madrid and lost. Probably should have lost against Chelsea and won. It's football, right?
It is football. But I will say, too, sometimes it doesn't come down, and I know this being a coach for so many years, it doesn't come down sometimes to tactics or defensive schemes or plans that you have for a game. Sometimes it does come down to those intangibles, heart, will, desire, passion, you know, your graft, your grind, how much you're going to get stuck in. And City did just that. And Pep said after the game too, and on the on-field interview, he said, I don't know how we did it. I don't know how. For me, it was impossible. But I mean, with that group of players, and when you believe like that, anything is possible. So City certainly deserved it. And to the Nicholas Jackson point, Arsenal played Chelsea not too long ago, just a few days back, and the end product for Chelsea just isn't there. It's very strange, G. I find it weird.
Yeah, like, and it seems like, and this is going back years, like, you know, to when I first started watching the Premier League, like, it seemed like the thing at Chelsea was, they just need a number nine. They just need a number nine who can score. And whoever they bring in just doesn't matter how hot they were, you know, in La Liga or Serie A or the Bundesliga, wherever they get them from, they get to Chelsea and it just falls apart. And I used to think, oh, it's because, you know, Mourinho's tactics aren't suited for him, or, you know, this guy's tactics. It's just, there's something just hoodoo voodoo about playing striker for Chelsea. I don't know what is going on there.
I don't know either, but all I can say, long may it continue.
Absolutely.
Let's take a look at that other semifinal, and it was Coventry who took on Manchester United, and we were treated to an absolute classic. After Manchester United were up 3-0 over Coventry, it was the championship side, Coventry, who clawed their way back to bring the game level to 3-3 and force extra time. In the end, it had to come down to penalties, where Manchester United got the better of Coventry by a score of 4-3 on kicks from the spot, and thus they get back to the FA Cup final for a second straight season. Gaetano, Coventry had a match-winning goal ruled out in extra time due to a rather controversial offside, if you want to call it that, after VAR review. There was crossbars, there was posts, there was chances, there was everything in this game. Like, I don't even know where to start, man. So I'm gonna give it to you. This was a crazy game.
It hurts me to say this, but like, United have given us two of the best like games of football in my lifetime, and just in the FA Cup competition alone, the game against Liverpool and now this one. It's just, you know, like when you want to introduce soccer to somebody who doesn't watch it, like, I just want to show them these games and be like, this is what I wake up at 7:30 in the morning for. Like, right. This is what drives me nuts when I'm sitting at work, you know, throwing things around because the game's not going the way. Like, this is what it's about. I want to also say, United were up 3-0. There was absolutely no reason for that game to go to extra time and penalties from them. That was awful. Like, just, you know, to call it, you know, semi-pro defending would be an insult to semi-pro players. Like, that was, like, they just... It's not even that they turned off. They just like disappeared. Yeah. The goals just like, I feel like if we like got a group of our kind of guys that like kick around, could have scored those goals on United. They were just, it was just awful. Massive props to Coventry for, you know, the fight back, the comeback. The offside, like, it's toenails offside. It kills me. And I will always stand by VAR because I think it's great. It's implement, like, the referees involved in it that are idiots. VAR itself is great. It was the right decision.
Yeah.
I would hate to be the United fan who sees their team go out on that decision going the other way, because it is by the finest of margins. It was offside. But that's got to be just up there with some of the greatest football I've ever watched in my life.
Absolutely incredible. And when you texted me and it was just like, oh my god, and I texted back, like, yes, oh my god, you couldn't believe what you were seeing. You just couldn't. But you know, I look at when Coventry started the comeback, it took over 70 minutes for them to start that. So United have to be ashamed of themselves, in my opinion. I know Ten Hag came out in the press and said, nope, we won the game, nothing to be ashamed about. People will say, oh, it's, you know, the one goal was a deflection. Yeah, but for me, if I'm looking at that from a coach's perspective, why aren't you closing out so that a shot doesn't happen? Why aren't you getting close to people so that he can't get a shot off and that he has to play square or backwards? You know, it's all these little things. So United did disappear defensively, but somehow, some way, they get over the line and they get back to the FA Cup final as a result. And gee, in terms of our picks, I did pick both of the games correct, and I do wish the result in the Manchester game would have been different in the way that you thought it was going to go. As you went 50%, gee, you rightly picked Manchester City to win. And I did say that I felt that the United and Coventry game would go to extra time or penalties. I said that it wasn't going to be done.
Yeah, you nailed that. You nailed that.
So what? Apart from getting that correct, I still think it begs a bigger question in that, let's say this wasn't the semifinal and this game takes place next year and this is in the regular rounds. And let's say it's hosted at Old Trafford, this game, and it ends 3-3 after 90 minutes. There's not going to be a replay next year. And we talked about this in our last show. So do you think now, are we going to experience the same magic of the cup?
I think in those early rounds, it's going to be different. You know, like, that would be, like I said last week, not just huge, like, in terms of football for, you know, for Coventry City hosting a team like United, but like financially, that is, you know, probably one of, if not the biggest, you know, gates for them for that year. And that for some smaller clubs, especially not just in the Championship, but if you go lower down in the table in League One and League Two, like, that could be, you know, like, life changing for the club to have a team like United or City, even Arsenal, Spurs, like, a big Premier League club coming to your ground could, you know, be, you know, a financial lifeboat. Like, that is huge for them. And again, to be robbing them of that for the sake of, you know, six or seven teams playing in Europe, it's bullshit.
Yeah, I fully agree with you there, and you did it spot on. So I do believe, unfortunately, it will take away from some of the magic of the cup. But what I can only hope is that in some capacity, the decision is reversible. So if you want to go and test it, FA, go ahead. But hopefully it is reversible, because what we've, again, I'm all for evolution of the game. I'm not a dinosaur. I'm good for when things evolve, you move along with it. But there are some things in football that do not require changing.
I mean, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Well, if it's not broken, don't fix it. That's exactly it. And, you know, this isn't broken. It's been working for, what, hundreds of years?
Literally.
Yeah, incredible. So hopefully we can see that again. But regardless, we don't need to highlight this final of this competition at this particular moment in time, because it doesn't take place until May 25th, which is actually 1 month today, from today, excuse me, exactly, which is pretty wild. But what does this cup final, would you say, Gaetano, mean for both of these teams respectively?
So I'm going to start with United, actually. I think this isn't just an FA Cup final for them. This is, you know, a chance at revenge for last year, where City not only dunked an FA Cup final on them, but as part of a treble. Like, the one thing that United held over everyone in England was the treble, and City, you know, dunked the FA Cup final on them on their way to the treble. It's huge for them. This is, you know, maybe a chance for Ten Hag to save his job. This is maybe a chance for a lot of these players to save their careers at United. So I think it's more than just the 90 minutes or 120 minutes and penalties of football for them. And for City, it's a chance to, you know, we kind of stomped on them last year. Like, this is a chance to, like, twist the heel in. And, you know, I've always said Manchester's blue. This is a chance to kind of, you know, almost fully erase any doubt of that, you know. Winning two FA Cup finals against United in a row is just unheard of. Like, I can't imagine anything like bigger than that in terms of, like, a rival. Like, for you, imagine beating Chelsea in, you know, two consecutive FA Cup finals. Like, unless you beat them in European finals 2 years in a row, that's really the only, that's the only other step up. So I think it's massive. You know, a chance for City to hopefully do a double. We also haven't retained the FA Cup, as far as I'm aware, in our history. So I feel like that's, you know, just another kind of notch to add to Pep's, you know, list of achievements. I think it's just, you know, if last year's final was massive, this is, you know, even bigger. I can't fully describe how massive this final is.
And we can't wait for it, especially me as a neutral fan. And I'm sure that there are millions and millions around the world that can't wait for it. And once again, that FA Cup final will take place on May 25th, and we will be able to highlight that game for you all next month. This is Daniel Scarpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you are listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. The Champions League semifinals are set and ready to go. Gee, both of our teams were eliminated in the quarterfinals, so obviously that disappointment is still there for us both. However, we still have two very, very good ties to look forward to, don't we?
The Madrid-Bayern tie is just, it's just box office, isn't it? It's, you know, two of the biggest clubs in the world. You know, on the biggest stage in European football, that's going to be massive. And then on the other side of the bracket, it's kind of like a weird tie in that, like, you know, two teams not overly expected to be here. I don't want to call them overperforming. Obviously, they're playing phenomenally. But, like, kind of unexpected semifinalists. And so one of them obviously is going to end up in the finals. Kind of, I don't want to call it a fairy tale run either, but it's a really weird dynamic in both semifinals. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I love the difference between those two semifinals, and we're going to highlight each of those here and now, along with who we believe is going to get to the Champions League final as a result. Gee, let's first start by looking at Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. They're clearly two heavyweights in the world of football and in this competition specifically. Bayern Munich having won this competition 6 times, Real Madrid having won it 14 times. Only one of these two amazing teams are going to get through to the final, G. And for you, how do you see this tie going? And who do you think is going to win it over two legs?
I think this is going to be... like it's going to be a different type of Ancelotti tactical battle, I think. I think he's not going to be able to, you know, do what he did against City, which is play basically parking the bus and kind of praying. I don't think that's going to work with Bayern. They're not that they're not an attacking team, but their style of attacking is just so different to what City does, just that possession and overload. Bayern like to play on the counter with Sané and Gnabry on the wings. You know, Harry Kane is kind of the target man dropping in. I think it's going to be a really, really different clash than kind of what we're expecting. I'm going to have to change what I said in the quarterfinals when I said the winner of City and Madrid was probably going to go on to win the league or win the Champions League. I think Bayern are going to go through. I don't think it's going to be, you know, by a big margin. It might honestly need extra time or penalties, but I just... I'll explain it in the second. But just kind of for the romance, for the story of it, I've got Bayern Munich going through.
Absolutely brilliant, and I've been tossing and turning on this one, and for me, I don't think that Real Madrid can come out and play how they did against Manchester City. They can't play against Bayern in the same way. Not to say that wouldn't work. I just don't think that's the right sort of approach for Real Madrid, and I don't think that they're going to do that anyways because Ancelotti's a world-class manager. But there is something with this game that that for me sort of begs something a little bit different. And when I look at something needing to be a bit different, the team I look to is Bayern. So I'm also taking Bayern, and again, just for that little bit of difference, they were bitterly disappointed, obviously, in the Bundesliga, and rightly so. But you take a look up and down that team, that's a type of team that can play in a variety of ways. I think that Thomas Tuchel will be incredibly resolute. I think he'll have his team set up, well-drilled, ready to go. And I'm also going to take Bayern for those reasons. And I think that this is going to be such a close battle to say that it's going to be done after, 180 minutes. I'm going to probably say not. I think it's going to need more than that. But, I am also going Bayern Munich. And in the other semifinal, we have Dortmund, who will play against PSG. Gaetano, a lot of people forget that it's these two teams who have already played each other twice in group play many months ago, as Dortmund and PSG were both in Group F. Dortmund topped the group with 11 points, and PSG came second with 8 points. And that group, although it might be irrelevant now, was incredibly tight, if we remember. A lot of people are calling it the group of death. Because Milan also finished with 8 points, but a lesser goal difference than PSG. And Newcastle even fought right until the end, and having picked up a win and 2 draws in group play themselves. What this all sort of points to is that these two teams, Dortmund and PSG, they've already had 2 different looks at each other in this competition specifically, and now they're going to have 2 more looks at each other. So who do you see going through, Gaetano, and how will they do it?
Okay, so let me tell you my story first before I get to the how. I've got Dortmund going through the finals at Wembley. It's a rematch of the 2013 Champions League final, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. Marco Reus's probably final game for Dortmund, potentially for his career. He's kind of hinted at that. And I've got him, I'm going to spoil you, I've got him winning the Champions League kind of as his send-off. There's something about, like I said, like the romance of it. I don't think, I feel like the football world, just it works kind of in funny ways like that. And sometimes, and I think that, you know, 11 years later, he's going to get that chance to finally kind of cement himself in European champions history. I think this is going to be just an absolute just shootout. I think this is going to be 7 or 6 on aggregate. It's just going to be, you know, whoever scores last is going to win this tie. Two just all offense teams. It's going to be so totally different from the Bayern Munich Madrid. Like, that's going to be this super tense tactical battle. And I can just, all I picture is, like, you know, when you watch like Timbit soccer and the kids just like run from one end of the field to the other. That's what I'm picturing from this tie. And I think it's going to be fantastic.
I don't know if I could have said that any better. The only thing I will add to that is to say that it's been referenced before, not on this show, but in the footballing world. Football's like a love story. So I'm taking Dortmund too. I think that was pretty clear at the very beginning of our show when we were talking and alluding to it and kind of hinting at it. I'm looking at a Bayern-Dortmund final just like you for all of the same reasons. And I also think it's going to be you know, between the two games, very high on aggregate in terms of the score line. The reason why I'm going to say that Dortmund gets over the line over PSG, they've got a bit more metal about them, a bit more steel, dare I say it, a bit more heart. I don't want to call a team out like that, but
you're not wrong.
Yeah, no, I hate to do that because I don't want to go after somebody's, you know, character like that, but or a club's character like that, I should say. But I think that Dortmund have that. So, gee, we're both going Bayern and Dortmund, and I can only pray that that can happen because I think that would be unbelievable.
And just for the listeners, like, we don't. It's funny, we don't really talk about this stuff outside of the show for the purpose of being able to have this conversation and not just be like, oh yeah, we already talked about this. This is what we decided. Like, so even when you started talking about Dortmund, like earlier in the show, my first thought was like, we have the exact same final, don't we?
And you know what? Again, I don't know how the Europa League picks are going to go here, which we're going to get into in a minute, but people must look at our show and we do get lots of compliments and what have you, but they must say it's so boring that they agree all the time. Very seldom. I could probably count on one hand over the past 18 months the times that we've disagreed on something. So again, like you said, we don't talk about these things, but they just come to fruition. G and I are both on the same page for many of things. And yeah, we'll see what happens in these semifinals. A reminder to our listeners that the Champions League semifinals do take place over two legs. The first leg will be played on Thursday, April 30th and Wednesday, May 1st. And then the second leg will be played on Tuesday, May 7th and Wednesday, May 8th. The Europa League semifinals are set and ready to go as well. Then we're going to highlight those games for you all here and now. Gee, we had a very tough time picking the quarterfinals, seeing as how close the contest and the teams were, because given their relative quality and all of these types of things, do you think that we can expect more of the same in the semifinals?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I still haven't made my picks. I've been kind of like I've over the couple of weeks, like I've been looking and I'm like, I think I've got it. And then like, I'll watch the games on the weekend. I'm like, maybe not, you know, look at some, you know, tacticos on Twitter talking about the teams go, I don't know. Like, so like, as of like right now, right before we made these picks, mine are still not locked in. So I'm actually gonna let you go first.
Right. That's fair enough. And we are going to take a look at these semifinals here and now. First one that we're going to look at, Leverkusen and Roma. So both of these teams have had, they have had very different seasons, you know, not to say that one's been bad and one's been good, but obviously Leverkusen undefeated and Roma had a change in manager and all these things. So they're finding successes in their own ways. And I think that this semifinal is going to have to be, in my opinion, must-see footy. And there's only going to be one team going through to the Europa League final. For me, it's going to be Leverkusen. And what I'm going to say here and now, and I hope it doesn't happen because I'd love to see it again, the football story continue. I think if Leverkusen was ever going to lose a game, it would be in this tie one time. So I'm going to still say that Leverkusen is going to win, but I think that Roma just might get the better of them on one occasion. I don't know how, I don't know when, but I think that's what's going to happen. So I'm going Leverkusen. G, what you got?
Like, I'm still so torn. I've been just, you know, in love with Leverkusen's football all season. You know, have run out of words multiple times on the show, like describing how beautiful they've been playing, the results they've been getting. But I keep flashing back to the Roma comeback against Barcelona a couple years ago in the Champions League. And I just think Stadio Olimpico in a European semifinal is one of the last places on earth I want to play as a visiting fan. Especially with Daniele De Rossi in the dugout, the way he's got them playing since he's come in. I'm going to take Roma.
He's done it. He didn't bottle it.
Wow. Yeah.
That's an unbelievable pick. And again, we've said it about the Champions League. Football is about stories and, you know, is sort of romance, if you will. Who knows? Maybe this is going to be the story. Maybe it really is, you know. It was Roma who had the heartbreak last year, right in the final with Green, and the year before they won the Conference League. Who knows? Maybe it's destined for them now. It's going to be incredible, G. I just can't wait for this final tie. I really can't. It's going to be awesome.
And like, and just on the other hand, because you know, you talk about the story, like, and I'm knocking on all of the wood as I say this, like, Leverkusen are currently on for an invincible treble. and I'm knocking on all of the wood right now.
Yeah.
Like that storyline in itself, you know, like it's just, I, either way, I'm, as a football fan, I'm happy with the result either way. I think either one of those two stories are great. There's just having sat in Stadio Olimpico, like for a Roma game, like it's just different. And I just, for a European semifinal, I can't see them not getting that result there. And I think it's going to carry them through.
Fair enough. And it's not a bad show. And again, I'm similar to you. Whatever happens here happens, and I'm going to be okay with it. Whether it's Leverkusen that continues this unthinkable dream, or it's Roma who, you know, continues this great comeback story, if you will. Again, both the storylines and the newspaper headings will be incredible either way. And in the other semifinal, Atalanta and Marseille are going to battle it out over two legs and try to respectively punch their ticket to the Europa League final. Gee, both of these teams are sort of mid-table, kind of fighting for a European place next season. So this competition, it has to mean a lot to both of them, like so much. And I personally expect sort of a, I don't want to call it an epic tie, but you're going to see two teams, I think, that want it so badly. And this is a sport, as we know, and we can only have one. I'll definitely go first again. I think, for me personally, I think it's going to be Marseille. I think that they're going to find a way to do it. Again, similar to when I picked them over Benfica, just kind of a gut feeling. I think they're going to kind of ride that wave moving forward. Nothing against Atalanta, because they're, some of the attacking football that they play is beautiful, and it has been for many a years. But that's going to be my pick, is Marseille. So I'll turn it over to you now for what you think.
It's interesting, because up until about 2 minutes ago, I was going to go with Atalanta. They've been playing good, you know, destroyed Liverpool, kind of, you know, historically a very good attacking team. But I just kind of keep looking at Marseille, and I'm like, there's just like that weird gut feeling where like, I think they're going to pull it out. I don't know how. I think it's going to be a different kind of desperation. I think with Roma and Leverkusen, I think, you know, kind of the glory and headlines of their whole season is going to be kind of in the balance, where I think with these two teams, it's like you said, like fighting for that, not just European trophy now, but for European competition next season, like really, you know, just, you know, like their lives depend on it. I think that is how that tie is going to be played. And yeah, just a weird gut feeling about Marseille right now.
Yeah, and we're on the same page for that one there. And who knows? We're going to see. Again, however that one goes, I'm not going to be mad either way. I think it's going to be great either way, for sure. But there is something about that Marseille team that sort of gnaws at me, that I think, you know what? I think that they can get to that cup final. So, G, you're going to take Roma and Marseille. I'm going to take Leverkusen and Marseille. And again, just like we're excited for the Champions League, we are so excited for the Europa League. A reminder to our listeners that the first leg of games will take place Thursday, May 2nd, and the second leg of games will go Thursday, May 9th. And now it is time for a local soccer update. The high school soccer season has commenced, and each team in all divisions locally here in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, have had themselves one game so far in league play. It's always a special time when the high school soccer season kicks off. And of course, it is just the beginning of what will be a minimum 6-week journey for each school. How awesome is it that we get to see some of the best talent that our soccer community has to offer here on display at the high school level?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, for a lot of these kids, for most of them, it is a pretty big step. You know, unless you played civics growing up, like you're used to just kind of playing your house league soccer, not really much stakes in any of it. To now all of a sudden, as kind of small relatively as it is, you know, representing your school is, you know, it's a pretty big honor. Like, you know, I don't take my time representing St. Mary's College, you know, for granted. I loved it for curling, not for soccer, but still, you know, it's kind of a weird kind of pride takes over when you are like representing your school. And so for a lot of these kids, it's kind of their first chance at it. And yeah, it's a chance to kind of prove yourself as the best in the city. Hopefully, you know, go to an OFSA or NASA. I don't know which one of those comes first. I've never been able to figure it out.
First, NASA is the northern region, then OFSA is all of Ontario.
Thank you. I'm never going to remember that, but thank you for that. But yeah, no, it's it's huge. And, you know, we have some great facilities. Obviously, we played the full season at Superior Heights, which is, you know, by far and away the best that we have. Yeah, it's just fantastic for them. It's fantastic for the soccer community to kind of rally around that and see it. And, you know, having some, not really personal things, but knowing a couple of the kids that are playing in it, you know, it's always good to kind of see the kind of the sparkle in their eye when this time of year comes around.
For sure. And what I will say in terms of pride in representing your school for, well, what seemed like forever, everybody had pride in representing your in their school. And you just alluded to it there with St. Mary's. I always took huge pride in my 5 years that I took representing St. Basil in five different sports when I was in high school there. But then have to admit, just before COVID, maybe a few years, it almost seems like that kind of phased out. Then COVID hit, and now that sort of pride and passion is back. And it's back probably bigger and better than ever. So, yeah, it's great to see and be a part of that pride and passion of the four high schools here that we have in the Sioux. And again, there's things on the line whereby, you know, teams and schools can achieve some great things at the city level, regional level with NASA, and then provincial level at OFSA too. So it is really cool to see that that's happening. And again, minimum 6 week journey as the season is just getting started. A reminder to our local listeners that anyone looking to catch high school soccer action here in the Sioux, that games take place every night of the week between Monday and Friday, and all games kick off at 6 p.m., 7:30 p.m., and 9 p.m. every night at Superior Heights Soccer Field. This is Daniel Scarpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you are listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Full Time. As we round out today's show, we want to thank you all for spending a little bit of time with us talking about the sport that connects us all. G, well done tonight, sir.
Thank you. You as well. Always a pleasure joining you. It feels... And I mean this in the nice way possible. It feels like it's like 2 days and then we're recording again. And I love it. It's the best time of the year. The run in the Prem, you know, closing stages of the European competition. Just couldn't write a better script for this.
The run in is happening in the world of football, and it's happening here on Full Time as well. And we take great pride in this, and we don't take days off. So we definitely love it. And it's always a great joy to be here with you, my friend. A reminder to our listeners that the next episode of Full Time will be recorded the week of April 29th, 2024. In that show, we will discuss Europe's Big Five, the Champions League, the Europa League, and local and regional soccer. So please do stay tuned in for that. As always, we'll keep everyone in the loop with all the happenings in the world of football. For weekly content, make sure to hit like, follow, and subscribe to all platforms of both the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Podbean. For Gaetano Gallo, my name is Daniel Scarpino, and thank you for tuning in to Full Time. We look forward to seeing you at kickoff next time back here on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. Best always.